So, welcome to Chazara Shir for Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. That which was, I think, three parts, maybe even more than that, when we did the weekly Shir. So, necessarily, I'm going to be skipping a lot of the material that we covered there. My main goal is to clarify the sugya itself, just the Gemara that we saw, and to understand whether it is Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, is it not? Based on factors within the story itself on Daf Pei Gimel. I'm going to be skipping the whole discussion about coercion and kofin and do we kofin this kind of person and that kind of person, other than a few things that necessarily make it into the discussion of our Gemara itself. But the case we're looking at is a case on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, the end of Perek Vav, in which we have an Amora. We're going to name him Rabba Bar Bar Chana, even though he appears by the slightly different spellings in different sources. But we have an Amora who seems to be entirely in the right regarding paying workers who damaged and really destroyed the property they were working on. Nonetheless, he is told by Rav, number one, not to demand payment for the damage, and number two, to pay them their wages. So that's what we have to understand. What exactly is this? Why should he be obligated to do this? As it appears, he is. So in order to frame a lot of this, I want to introduce the idea that there are three different categories of duty to act on behalf of others. Three different circumstances in which we are supposed to act in a way that benefits other people. Ezra, you shared what? The source sheet? I just got a message that you shared a file. Yes, the source sheet. Okay, thank you. So, and if anyone wants it in Word, I can provide it in Word. I forgot to send it out that way. But there are three different categories of duty. Number one, din. Law. The law obligates me to do something. Opposite end of the spectrum, chesed. It's a good thing to do this. It fulfills a mitzvah, but it's not a requirement. And then somewhere in between, as we have to discuss, is lifnim mishuras hadin, where you go beyond your legal obligations. And we'll have to see whether this is a relaxed form of din. So it's din, but it's not full din. Or whether we view it as a less relaxed form of chesed. Where it's chesed, but it's more of an imperative than chesed. We'll come back to that. That, by the way, for those who are watching him, that's where Rav Sammy is going to pick on me. At that point in the shir. So, what we want to know here is this: our Gemara does not explicitly invoke lifnim mishuras hadin, but as we're going to see, Rashi will. So what is the relationship between this story of Rabba Bar Chana and Lifnim Mishuras Hadin? That's number one. Number two, when Rabba Bar Chana is told to pay them, is that a psak? Is it binding? And if so, if it's Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, why would I call it Lifnim beyond the letter of the law at all, right? Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, I haven't translated the term, to go beyond the line of the law. And then number three, if this really is a binding psak, where would it be binding and how far would it go? And again, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. We've got an hour here. So starting source that we'll use is Bav Mitzia Daf Lamed Amud Beis. And I've got it here on your sheet, and I'm going to run through it. This is a Chazara Shir. We're not going through everything bit by bit, but this, I think, the first few sources are important to make sure that we have down. So this starts out with the story of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, classic Tana, aged at this point in the story, we think. He's walking on the road. And so he encounters somebody who has this big load of wood. And the guy puts down the wood, and he's resting. So Amar Le Dali Li, and he says to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, pick him up for me. Amar Le Kamashav, and he says, how much do they cost? He says, Paga de Zuz, it costs half a Zuz. He gives him half a Zuz, and then renders it Hefker. He says, I'm buying it off of you, and then I'm rendering it Hefker, because I can't help you lift that. I'm not helping you lift that. So the guy is smart, and he says, I claim this wood. Now you have to help me. Gives him another half a Zuz, renders it Hefker. Sees the guy doing this again, and says, no, 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 no. It's Hefker for everybody else. It's not Hefker for you. Not that it really works that way, but that he wants this guy to lay off. So the Gemara asks, but Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi has no obligation anyway after the three dots for those who are looking at the Gemara itself. But Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi zakein venu lefi chvodo hava, he was a zakein, whether that means elder, tamachacham, whatever, he's not obligated in this. To which the Gemara answers, you're right, but Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi lefnim mishuras hadin huda avad, he was going beyond what the law demands. Detani Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef taught, off of a pasuk in Parshas Yisro. This is when Yisro tells Moshe that he should appoint judges, and he says, v'odata lahem, you will teach them, the nation, zeh beis chayehem. What beis chayehem means is an interesting discussion for another time. Rashi in two different places says two different things. Es haderech, teach them the path that they will walk. Haderech is gemilus chasadim. Yelchu, that they will walk. Ze bikur cholim, that's taking care of the sick. Ba, haderech yelchu ba. Zo kvura, that's burial. Ve'ez hamaseh asher ya'asun, and the deed, ze hadin, asher ya'asun, that they shall do. Zu lifnim mishuras hadin. And when we gave shiur originally, we talked more about what exactly we're learning from these from these words in the pasuk, and in particular went through a whole bunch of different views about Asher Ya'asun being Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, my current favorite being what I saw in the Rav in Halachic Morality, in which he said Asher Ya'asun, the deed that they shall do, because each person does it in their own way when you're dealing with Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. I thought that was very very clever. So in any case, that's what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi did, traceable to what Yisro says to Moshe. And then the Gemara goes on to have Rabbi Yochanan say, Yushalayim was destroyed because they only did Din Torah, they did not go Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Okay, that is your apparent biblical source for the concept of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. We will have to come back later to discuss whether it really is a source for Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. The other Gemara that we need to know in order to address this is Bava Metziach of Dalet Amud Beis regarding objects that were found in the street. So the story goes that Rabbi Yehuda is walking in the marketplace behind the Mar Shmuel, and it's the marketplace de Beidaisa. So he says to him, what happens if I find a wallet here? Do I have any obligation towards the owner of this wallet? So he says, you get to keep it. So he says, what if a Jew comes along and identifies it as his own? He's able to demonstrate it's his. So he says, then you have to give it back to him. So he says, I don't understand. Either it's mine, or it's not mine. Why should I have to give it back to him if it's mine? So he responds, Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, and we get a story about Avuah d'Shmuel and doing this sort of thing. So even though it was found in the marketplace, you're going to return it. You don't technically have to. It was in the marketplace. The owner has given up, has no right to claim it at this point. It's really yours. But we want you to go beyond in order to give it back to him. The business about a Jew, what if it's a non-Jew, is a good discussion for another time. Okay, but then you get the second half of this Gemara, in which Rava is walking behind Rav Nachman, later generation, and he's in the leather workers market. We talked about the Tshuva's Kinyan Torah, the distinction between the two markets, the market with the rabbis in it, the market with the leather workers in it. But that's, again, not our discussion right now. Rava is walking behind Rav Nachman in the market and asks him the same question, what if you find a wallet there? And he says to him, you get to keep it? What if somebody comes along and gives a simon for it? He says, you still get to keep it. Ah, but he's screaming, it's his! Yeah, okay, people also scream when their house falls down. It doesn't change the fact that their house fell down. He lost the wallet, that's it, it's done. He can scream as much as he likes. So we have on the one hand the first statement of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, you have to give it back, and then apparently no, you don't. I'm not going to go through all the Lifnim Mishuras Hadin cases that we've identified. I'm just bringing these two because I think they are necessary for our conversation. So with these two things in mind, we're going to approach Pei Gimel. Yes, Rav Sammy.
So maybe you will answer this, but I've always been troubled by his first source. What is Rabbi Shmuel accomplishing by being mafkir this thing?
Well, he's being mafkir because he doesn't want it.
No, but I'm saying, look, Nimishu has him with a bin to help the guy learn his tongue.
He
right?
Can't.
Or whatever it was. He didn't do that.
He's physically unable.
I understand. So either say, like, I can't do it, or doing.
So I
how does that help anyone?
Right. So I think the answer is that this is not a guy who's bringing the wood home to use in his fireplace. This is a guy who's like Hillel, who gathers wood. He's not like Hillel, manifestly, but you know what I mean. He gathers wood and then he sells it. So you're buying the goods off of him, so he doesn't need to go to work that day. That's the way I understand the story.
That's so interesting, because that's not him of Te'ina.
No, it's avoiding the need for Te'ina, and the guy goes home happy.
Right, meaning...
you didn't fulfill Te'ina.
Like,
I mean, you did fulfill Te'ina in the sense that the guy has now gotten to his destination. You just right. removed the journey.
I just think it's very interesting that this would be like the mystery of the thing.
I understood.
Yeah, it makes the thing of discussion, but it's really just for him. It's very interesting.
Okay. So that brings us to our Gemara, Source Gimel. Rabba Bar Bar Hanan, as the Bar Ilan has it on Pei Gimel. Rabba Bar Bar Hanan, Tavrele Hanu Shakuloi Chavisa de Chamra. He had a barrel of wine. Porters were hired to convey the wine. They broke the barrel. Shakalagli Mayu. So he takes their coats and he says, I am demanding this because, you know, you broke my stuff. So Asu Amru Rav, they told Rav. Amrle, Rav says, Havalagli Mayu, give them their coats back. Amrle, Dino Hachi. That the law? Amarle in, he says, yes, we'll come back obviously to that word. He says, yes, that is the law. And he gives him a nice pasuk in Mishle. Leman telech b'derech tovim, so that you will walk in the path of the good. Yoav lugli mayu, fine, gives him the coats. Amarle, but they also said, aniyanan v'tarchinan kula yom v'kafinan, we're poor, we worked all day long, we're hungry, v'les lamidi, and we got nothing now, because we didn't get our wages, so we can't afford to buy food. Amarle Zil Havagrayu. He says, that's a good point, Rav says. Go pay them. Amarle Dina Hachi. He says, for real? That's the law? Amarle in, yeah, and he gives him the second half of that pasuk. Barchos Tzadikim Tishmor, you will guard, or you shall guard, the ways of the righteous. So, is this a case of Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, telling him you can't claim the damages, and not only that, you have to pay them for their work. You could look at this and say, right, what are your three options? The ones that we staked out in the beginning. This is din, right? Like it sounds. Dina hachi in. This is din. You can't take payment from them for the damage, and you have to pay them. Opposite end of the spectrum, you could say, no, this is chesed. They should be paying you. But you're not going to do it because you're a nice guy. Or middle, whatever that middle is, lifnim mishuas hadin. So first of all, we can rule out the idea that this is din. That we can rule out. If they were posheya, if they were careless, which we're going to discuss, they have no right to anything. And if they were not posheya, if they were not careless, then we have a protocol. They're supposed to swear they weren't careless, or bring proof, if there are eidim around, that they weren't careless. Neither of which happens in this story. So it's clear this is, we can rule out din. That's not what this is. So it's really only either lifnim mishuras hadin, whatever that means, or chesed. Okay. Ezra, were you going to say? No? Okay.
Never mind.
Okay. So what I want to do as a chazara is look at five factors in this case, which I put in a table for you on the sheet, that are all relevant when you evaluate whether this is a case of lifnim mishuras hadin. So just looking at the table momentarily, the five factors are in the right-hand column. So number one, the status of the workers as either needy or hungry or both, right? That's number one, the fact that that's emphasized in our case. Number two, the fact that it's Rabba Bar Bar Chana, he's an Amora, and maybe that's significant in our case. Those are the two elements that are about the players here. Does it matter that they're needy and hungry? Does it matter that he is an Amora? Then we look at the harm itself, the harm that was done, breaking the barrels. Does the way the porters broke the barrels, and whether it's Pshia or not, affect whether this is Lefnim Mishuras Hadin or Chesed? And then the last two items there are about the verdict. Number one, Rav quoted Mishle. He didn't bring me the psukim that the Gemara and Daf Lamed brought, the psukim from Parshas Yisro. Does that matter? Does that influence how we read the case? And finally, the Derech Hapsak. Rav of Arachana doesn't want to pay, and Rav says, do it anyway. Is that compulsion? And if so, does that indicate whether this is Lefnim Mishuras Hadin? Okay, those are the five factors, and you can see, I'm going to be going through this in, as, you know, step by step, but you can see the columns. The first column, or I guess the second one from the right, is the side in each of these factors to argue that this is really more of a chesed thing. Okay? Then the next column is, in each case, the side to argue it's closer to din, which you can do for each of these factors except for the pasuk in Mishlei. There's no way that the pasuk in Mishlei makes it more like din. There's just nothing you can do with that. That's a clear piece of evidence that this is more of a chesed thing. And then the last column, which I identified as v'chulu, are side factors that also have to be considered when you look at these, when you look at each item. So we're going to go one by one. First of all, in terms of the players in our story, so we emphasize that they are needy and hungry. Does that matter? Well, you could argue that the hunger is quoted here, it's brought here, in order to build the case that this is chesed, and it's not even a lifnim mishuras hadin requirement. It's about their needs. It's not about you, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. You're right, Rabbi Bar Chana, you are 100% correct. They broke your stuff. They have no claim on you whatsoever. Nonetheless, they're hungry. How could you not help them? And indeed, the Pesach Choshen brings, I didn't bring it on the sheet, but it's in Chelek Gimel, Perek Ches, Ha'ara Pehei, he brings a view that Rav's ruling was only because they needed the payment for their survival. It's really about chesed. And of course, then you could also go beyond and say that's not just porters. This will apply to anybody who's in that sort of economic situation. So that's one way to argue this. However, there's good reason. Sorry, Rav Alex?
Do we say that it's some sort of, you know, hindering the employee-employee relationship or chesed, like,
interesting. Could you suggest a duty of care somehow from employer to employee which warrants that you go beyond in order to give them chesed, such that I would say, imagine the following scenario. There's a person in the community who's in need of support. We're going to go to his employer first and say somehow you have a responsibility as opposed to others. It's an interesting idea. Somehow makes it achicha more so or something like that. I don't know. I give Cheryl a few years back on employer-employee relations, and there is a definite obligation of an employer to protect an employee in the context of the work environment. But I'm not sure that it goes beyond that. It's an interesting question. I don't know. The argument against saying that it's about their hunger is in the Yerushalmi's version. If you take a look at source Dalet, this is the version that appears in the Yerushalmi, and again, I'm going to read this out because it becomes very relevant, where we're told, Tani Rav Nechemya taught, Kader Maser Kadro Levarnosh. You had a guy with pots. He gave his pots to somebody. Tavrin, who broke them, Aron Gulsay. And he took his stuff. Asa Gabe Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. The fellow comes to Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Amar le Ezel Amor le Leman Telech Bederach Tovim. He said, "Go tell them Ezel Amor le. Go tell him the pasuk in Mishlei." Azav Amar le Yoav Golsei. He told him, and he gave his stuff back. Amar le Yoav Lach Agrach. But not only that, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina says to the worker, "Did he pay you?" Amar le Lo. He says, "No." Amar le Zil Vamor le Baruch Tzadikim Tishmor. Go give him the other half of the pasuk. Azav Amar le Yoav Le Agrach. And the guy told him, and therefore he paid up. So there are a few key differences which we're going to be looking at between this and the Bavli, but the one that we're looking at right now is that we had no specification whatsoever that this was a porter, and we had no specification that this was a needy, hungry person. It didn't say anything about that at all. Indeed, in the next source, I brought you the Meiri's version where he just says, Shomer Sacha Shenanas. He didn't say anything about the fellow's porter status or state of hunger and poverty. Nothing. So you could argue again. So that's what I have on the first line on the table. Karav lechesed is the Bavli's language, Lashon Bavli. Karav ledin is the Lashon of the Yerushalmi, as well as that Meiri. And then the added note in the Bechulu column was that Frisha, which I really, really liked. The Frisha on the tour, and I brought it for you in sources Vav and Zayin. Look at the language of the tour in Vav. He gives our case. You're traveling from point A to point B carrying the barrel. Something happens on a place where it should really not have happened. The barrel breaks. It's pshia. He's liable. Afilo mushomer chinam. He's liable even if he's a shomer chinam. However, mikomakom mitzvahu lasos lo lifnim mishuras hadin velitein lo scharo mein lo mayochal. Mitzvah to go lifnim mishuras hadin and pay him if he doesn't have anything to eat. So the prisha comments on that he didn't talk about liability for damages.
Well, depends how you read the
Torah. Exactly. So the way the Prisha reads the Torah is to break up that phrase. He says the way to read it is mitzvah lasas lo lifnim mishuras hadin, comma, do lifnim mishuras hadin by not demanding payment, and also litein lo skaro is chesed. That's what the Prisha, which I brought you in Zion, that's how he reads the Torah. This is supported by the Gra. The Gra in Mishlei, which I brought you in Source Ches, who tells you there's a difference between Tov and Tzadik. When the Pasuk said, L'man telech b'derech tovim, right, that's different from B'orcha Tzadik and Tishmor, which is why Rav didn't just give him the entire Pasuk in the first place. L'man telech b'derech tovim, he says that's being made to Mabrios, which is something that anybody would do. So anybody would be expected to not charge the porter. The porter did the best he could. And then Orchos Tzadikim Tishmor, is a separate duty, which is not really a duty at all, but that's your kindness, which he says very few people will do. But that's a separate idea. So this I put as a separate point. You could make the argument that their state of neediness is emphasized in the Bavli to say this is chesed. You can make the argument that it's excluded in the Yerushalmi, making it sound more like this is really, you know, lifnim mishuras hadin, and closer to din, and then you have this splitting that the Prisha reads into the Torah, and which the Vilna Gaon seems to be suggesting as well. Yes, Rosami. You're muted. You're still muted.
No, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I hear you.
Given that we know that certain Rishonim say it's a chiyuv when it's a poor person, right? That lifnim mishuras hadin, if you're dealing with a poor person, then it becomes actually something you have to do. So could you say that the reason that you include aniyim is because that's why he said dina hachi, meaning it relates to the question of what we mean by diverse chesed, but maybe because they were poor, that's why he had to absolve them from payment.
So that's part of what I knocked out of this in order to make it a Chazara Shir, was that discussion that we had in the Kfiya discussions about the relative wealth. Number one, does it matter whether the person who would be paying is a person of means? And number two, does it matter that the recipient would be getting? So you're right, it's not going to be in this Shir. Okay. So factor number two is Rabbah Bar Bar Hanna is an Amora. Does that matter? And we noted two different ways in which it might matter. First of all, he's a chassid. Being a chassid imposes certain obligations on you. If you take a look at source test from the Or Zeruah, I underlined it. He says, "Ve'im bal nefeshu." He's dealing with the case of an aveda and restoring someone's lost object. He says, if the person is a bal nefesh, then even though it's not lefi chvodo, he still should do it. Asher yasun zo lefnim mishuras hadin. The Tzitz Eliezer, which I brought you in Yud, you can see it's a long paragraph, we're not going to be going through it in a Chazara Shir, but the Tzitz Eliezer says as well, he says, it's din for you, because you are a Tov, you are a Tzaddik. He's not accepting the Vilna Gaon's idea, clearly, of the distinction between the Tov and the Tzaddik. But he says, of course, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be conducting yourself differently. And it may be a function of declaring yourself a chassid. I quoted the paper that noted that the Rambam seems to say that if you want to declare yourself to be someone of a certain degree of piety, then yes, you have added obligations. I brought you the clearest reference in the Rambam, because there are some ways in which it's not so clear, but here in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, Hey Yud Aleph, he talks about the issue of Chilul Hashem, and he says, after the ellipsis, in the second line, Hakol lefi gadlo shel chacham tzarich sheyedaktek al atzmo v'yaseh lefnim mishuras hadin, tzarich. He says, you have to. This becomes your duty, your obligation. So as a pious person, you may have special responsibilities. And then the other reason to have to do it is because you are an Adam Chashuv. You are an important person. You're an important person. You may have responsibilities that are different from somebody else. I brought you Rabbeinu Yohanan in Yud Beis, where he talks about being an Adam Chashuv. I explained in the Shir that I think the rationale for being obligated to act differently as an Adam Chashuv is because people will model their behavior on yours. So I showed you Rashi and Ksuvos, Adam Chashuv Sha'ani, in the discussion of whether you're allowed to help a litigant to do something that will defeat the other guy in a creative way. So he said, I shouldn't really have helped my relative. I think it was Rav Nachman in that story. Rav Nachman of Yonasan. He says, I helped my relative. I really shouldn't have helped them. Why? You're supposed to help your relative. He says, yeah, but I'm an Adam Chashuv, and people are going to learn from me, and they're going to do it for people who are not their relatives, as Rashi says in Yud Gimel. There was also a Ritva that we brought from Shabbos Nun Aleph. But that's the argument for saying that, again, this is more like din. It is the fact that it's Rabba Bar Bar Chana in our case. The argument against is, one second, you go back to that Yerushalmi, in which he's not an Amora at all. That's number one. And number two, go back to the Gemara in Bava Kamma about returning the Aveda in the marketplace, where we said you have to return it Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, even though the question that was asked was not, would I have to, or you can make the argument, it's not would I have to, but rather it's what is the law in general, does one have to? So it's not just about someone who is an Adam Chashuv or an Adam Chassid who's going to be obligated to do it. Hang on, I'm getting a message, my speaker isn't working. Okay, good, we're back. So the fact that in Bava Kamma, regarding returning the object, it doesn't specify who would have to actually return it, suggests to me that the standard of Lifnim Mishuras Hadin may not be linked to being Chassid or being Chashuv. The truth of the matter is that I say, I'm realizing now, I shouldn't be framing it quite this way. I've been framing it as, since he's a Chassid, since he's a Chashuv, therefore that makes it more likely that he has a Lifnim Mishuras Hadin obligation. And if he's not an Amora, if I take the Yerushalmi, then maybe it's more likely that this is a Chesed obligation.
That's what my comment was going to be.
That was your comment. But then Bava Kamma is on the other side. Bava Kamma, regarding returning the Aveda, is saying that Lifnim Mishuras Hadin will apply even if you're not a Chassid. And in that case, you can't bring me any proof from our discussion here. Bava Kamma is not evidence that our case is not Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. It's just the opposite. It's evidence that our case is Lifnim Mishuras Hadin even according to the Yerushalmi. Because Lifnim Mishuras Hadin will apply to somebody who's not a Chassid and who's not a Chashuv. You can make that argument from Bava Kamma. Okay, good. Interesting. Okay. But that's your... Yes?
Very quick. Based on the way you quoted the Rav before, it's like... So, you think part of the Mishurism is a subjective category of halacha. You think, I feel like we keep going back and forth between, does the notion that there are different halachos for different people mean it's more din or more chesed? So before we're saying if it's specifically for Aliyim, that's more chesed. But if it's specifically for Chashuv, that's more din.
But you have halachos that are different for different people.
Right. So, but I'm just noting maybe based on the Rav, it's like very, compelling. But that's the type of thing that the Mishnah is trying to do. It's a more subjective form of halacha.
I mean, the Rav's is really self-driven. It's less about, is the obligation on different people differently, and more on, you actually get to say. It's your choice. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is the way the Rav does it. Okay. So, your third factor takes us away from the players, and more in terms of the event itself. The way that the porters broke the barrels. If they broke the barrels carelessly, the ruling would seem to be more of a chesed thing. If it was not careless, and there's some extraneous factor preventing them from bringing witnesses and preventing them from taking a shvuah, then the ruling that they should pay is more likely to be din-like. They weren't careless, therefore, don't charge them, and we're even going to have you pay them. So, one approach here is that they actually acknowledge that it was pshia, and therefore this is more like chesed. And that was Rashi's approach to the case. I brought you Rashi in Source Yadalit. He says explicitly it was ubipshia. It was done carelessly. Ramban does not like this idea. He says if it was pshia, then the Gemara should have said so. But the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat Shin Dalit and the Sma there follow Rashi that indeed it was a case of pshia. So that's one school of thought, is it was carelessness, and therefore I'm more likely to say this isn't really close to being din, this is much closer to being chesed. Rashi apparently is okay with that and still calls it lifnei mishuras hadin. That's something we're going to come back to. That's Rashi's philosophy of lifnei mishuras hadin. But we did note that within this school, you have a problem. And this is in my v'chulu thing in my table, I believe. Yeah, which is, Rav Sami really doesn't like the idea of rewarding people who break your barrels because they're careless. He thinks that's a bad idea. And indeed, the Sma has that as a halacha. If you take a look at the Sma in Source Tesvav, the words that I underlined and bolded, he says, this is only kol shalo yadanu shepasha b'mezid. This is only if you don't know that he did it intentionally. If you don't know that he did it intentionally, then you pay him. But if you know, who are you kidding? And we had the case of the Chavos Yair, the case in which the employer sued his maid for carelessly increasing a flame in an oven after he had warned her multiple times not to do so, and he brings her to Beis Din, and he does it to make her take this seriously in the future, and the Chavos Yair seems to be okay with that strategy. He even recommends it to somebody else. So on the one end, you'll say, don't reward Poshim. However, Rav Yaron Unger brought the Ma'aril in the end of Simen Kuf Mem, I didn't bring it on your sheet, who says, no, we do lifnei mishuras hadin even for a posheya. And Rav Sherman, in his article in Tehumen, quoted you the Derech HaYasher, Tzvi Pinchas Lipschitz, who says that this was exactly why Rabbi Bar Chanan didn't want to pay. It wasn't that he was a mean person. It wasn't that he had something in for needy porters. But he said, like, if I'm going to pay them for breaking this thing carelessly, what kind of a message am I sending? That was his point. Then you have school two, which says no, they didn't acknowledge that it was pshia. There was no statement from the porters that this was pshia, and in fact it could be construed as being closer to din, more like what we would think of as lifnei mishuras hadin. And that's the position of Rabbeinu Chananel, that's the position of the Ramban, that's the position of the Meiri. I brought you the Ramban in Source Yud Zayin, I brought you the Meiri in Source Yud Ches, to say this was not pshia at all. So why didn't they swear? Why didn't they pay? What's going on? So Ramban says that's why he took the coats. He took the coats to get them to take a shvuah, to get them to swear. He wasn't trying to demand. He wasn't trying to collect payment from them. It was a way to get them to either swear or pay. That's Ramban's view. The Meiri said it's because there were people around, and therefore you couldn't swear. You needed to bring a raya, and for some reason they couldn't bring evidence to support them. That's the Meiri in Yud Ches. But again, going back to the table, this factor in our case, this question of how did they break it, if you say it's pshia, this is closer to chesed. If you say it's not pshia, it's closer to din. And then we have the side issue of should you really be rewarding people if they broke your barrel carelessly. Okay? So far so good? Okay, so that brings us to the fourth and fifth factors, which relate to the verdict that was given. First of all, he quoted you Psukim in Mishlei. Well, why in the world did he not bring me what we saw in the beginning in the Gemara and Daf Lamed? This would seem to make it more of a chesed case, and indeed, Tosfos makes that point. We're going to talk about Tosfos much more at length in a bit, but if you look at Zorsi Yitaz, I brought you Tosfos from Bav Mitzia Daf Chavdalad Amud Beis, in which he points out that in our Gemara, we get Psukim that are Derech Kabbalah, Divrei Kabbalah. We get Laman Telech B'Derech Tovim, Asher Yasun. We get Laman Telech Tovim, which is Divrei Kabbalah, which is Mishlei, instead of Asher Yasun, which is Divrei Torah. And that's part of Tosfos' argument that our case is not even Lifnei Mishuras HaDin at all. That's part of his argument, that this is really just a pure chesed thing. So Ezer asked, I don't understand, we have psukim and chumash that teach us chesed, right? Did you really need to bring me something from Mishlei? And what I suggested at the time, when it came up in Shir, was, number one, that the biblical chesed psukim don't necessarily establish something as a deoraisa, like the Rambam on Ve'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha has all of these different sub-mitzvos which emerge from it, which parenthetically also come from Parshas Yisro, Bikracholim, Levayas Hameis, and all that, and he says that these are derabbanans, even though they're under Ve'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. That's number one. And number two, I thought maybe because this pasuk highlights chesed by a particular class of person, L'manteich b'derech tovim, orchot tzadikim tishmor, it's what tovim and tzadikim do, while the Torah's promotion of chesed tends to be a universal duty. There are things you could say about that, but that's, I think that's true. The Aruch HaShulchan has a different take on why he used Mishlei altogether. The Aruch HaShulchan says he used Mishlei because if you're going to tell somebody to do something and it's not the letter of the law, you have to indicate that that's true. You can't just say to a litigant, this is a bigger issue in halacha in terms of whether dayanim have to explain their rulings or not. But if you are going to tell somebody to do something and he's not legally obligated to do so, you better make that clear. So the Aruch HaShulchan says in Source Chaf, that's why he brought him Mishlei. He says, Mashma Gemar Shadayin Mechuyov Lomar Lokach Shemar Haroy La'asos Kein V'yomalo Da'af Da'lam Medina Hu Omnam Anash Anashim Tovim B'tzadikim and so forth. Okay. But that the use of Mishlei generally seems to put this much more in a chesed camp than in a din-like camp. And then the last factor is, he says to him, you got to pay, and he says, against your will, you have to pay. That sure sounds like din. However, it may not really be against his will. First of all, when you looked back at that Yerushalmi that we saw, you saw that it wasn't presented as a psak at all. The porters came and asked, right? The porters came and said, hey, but you know, he took our coats. And he said, go tell him this pasuk. It wasn't a back and forth. You didn't have that kind of pasuk. That's number one. Number two, the addition that appears in the Rif, he explicitly says, I bolded it in Source Chav Aleph, v'lo amar le'in. He did not reply, yes, actually. So some want to make the argument, since he doesn't reply, yes, so he's not saying that it's din at all. Rabbi Elon did not like that idea at all. He noted that argument about the in, and Dayan Elon in Mishpat Ivri said, yeah, but the Bach, who takes the position that we actually force people to do lifnim mishuras hadin, had an edition of the Gemara which did not have in. So apparently the lack of the word in does not keep you from viewing this as a serious obligation. But then we asked, so if it really is coercion, isn't that a little too much even for lifnim mishuras hadin? In other words, even if you're going to tell me that this is a din-like lifnim mishuras hadin and not a chesed or chesed-like lifnim mishuras hadin, even still, forcing the guy to do it is, or forcing Rabbi Baruch Hanan, who's not a guy, to do it is really remarkable. When you look at the cases in the Gemara of lifnim mishuras hadin, most of them don't involve a beis din and don't involve a psak and don't involve somebody forcing somebody. Granted that, as Ezer noted, bavakama chavdalad amid beis could, I'm sorry, the case on chavdalad amid beis could be seen, I don't know if I said Baba Kam, they could be seen as more of an obligation. The question of, do you have to return the object in the marketplace? And we do have the Ritzbah in Source Chav Beis and the Shittim Mekubetzes applying Lefnim Mishuras Hadin in what was clearly a case of Psak. It still does seem odd to be coercing, and that led to our entire discussion about coercion for lifnim mishuras hadin. That again, we're not reopening right now. I also floated the idea in Shir that maybe lifnim mishuras hadin should apply against one's will. Maybe lifnim mishuras hadin just means it's not what the other guy deserves, but that doesn't mean it's optional, right? In other words, he doesn't deserve it, but you should be doing it. Just a thought. Of another way to frame that. So that's our five line table in this, you know, in all of this, in terms of the different factors and how they weigh in understanding the case. So what emerges here? Is it Lifnei Mishuras HaDin or isn't it Lifnei Mishuras HaDin? So having analyzed the facts of the case, we're not going to be surprised to realize that, in fact, it's a machlokas as to whether this case is Lifnei Mishuras HaDin or not. Rashi takes the view it is Lifnei Mishuras HaDin. I brought it in Source Chav Gimel on Laman Teilech B'derech Tovim. He says, what is B'derech Tovim? Lifnei Mishuras HaDin. On the other hand, Tosos, which I brought you above in Source Yates, says, absolutely not. Of course this isn't Lifnei Mishuras HaDin. You brought the psukim from Mishlei. You suffered a clear loss at the hands of these porters. He says, of course this isn't Lifnei Mishuras HaDin. No, it's not. It's chesed. And we saw the pre-show, of course, who said both. But what's this machlokas really about between Rashi and Tosos? And this was my point where I liked this idea, and I think this gives us some insight overall about these din chesed and Lifnei Mishuras HaDin categories. By applying Lifnei Mishuras HaDin to Pei Gimel, Rashi frames Lifnei Mishuras HaDin as including cases in which the other party has no right to claim anything from me, but I'm going to help him because he's needy and he's hungry. It's my chesed to him. It's a ben olam l'chaveiro. Granted that all ben olam l'chaveiro is also ben olam l'makom, I'm not going there. The older abundans are also deraisas. We don't make a thing out of that. So to Rashi, Lifnei Mishuras HaDin is really a borrowed term. Literally, the term is din-related. It's about going beyond your legal obligations. But we're borrowing it to apply to general chesed in our Gemara. In other words, according to Rashi, Lifnei Mishuras HaDin is a fuzzy term for helping other people. Whether by carrying their groceries or going easy on them in court, or if you can't carry the groceries, paying them for their groceries, that won't help in that case because they need the groceries. But that's Rashi's way of framing this. While Tosfos says no, Lifnei Mishuras HaDin applies only if there is some level of legal obligation, and he gives you his principles in that Tosfos on Daf Chav Dalid, in which he says if you suffer a loss, you have no obligation. If no one would be obligated to do this, you have no obligation. Your obligation is, if there's a duty that other people have, and you, for technical reasons, don't have that obligation. Like Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, he's a zakein, therefore he doesn't have the obligation for the wood. There's chesed of one party towards another, but the motivation is primarily to achieve something that we call din. Lifnei Mishuras HaDin is a technical term. It's a style of din which is benevolent towards the one who really should have lost the case. You follow? That's Tosfos's way of looking at it. So that's the way I think that works as a way to understand what's going on. Okay, Sammy, you're letting me get away with that? Okay, good. He's mute.
If Rashi and Tosfos are consistent with that view.
So I think they are, but you know, show me where they're not, and then we.
When Tosfos gives different psukim, I don't think he's 100% clear that the pasuk of the Mishuras HaDin is like more rigorous than that of Montel Derek Tobin. Simply trying to figure out why the Mark puts one in one. One source and one another source.
He emphasizes that it's different. No, look at his line. Go back to Source Yates. He says not just that it's kracharina, but he says you brought mandel b'derech tovim shumi derech kabbalah b'shavik krada asher yasun shumi divrei Torah. He's emphasizing the fact that one is a chumish one and one is not.
That's fair.
I
hear you.
Okay. I'm just picking on you. So now let's ask the question. If Lifnei Mishuras HaDin really is a deoraisa, what is the root? Right? Rashi is comfortable saying it's not necessarily a deoraisa. You can use Pesukim and Mishlei, that's okay. But what about within Tosfos? So Rav Chaim Palagi actually actually says it's got to be a dal raisa, we said, because the Gemara says locharva Yerushalayim elam neshayamidu divrei maldin Torah. He says Yerushalayim is destroyed for not calling lefnei mishuras hadin. It must be a dal raisa, and we noted from the Stechemet that there's reason to disagree with that statement. But what would be the source for this being a dal raisa? So the obvious source is Asher Ya'asun, right? That the Gemara in Bava Metzia Dach Lamed Omid Beis brought. But when you take a closer look at it, you realize that pasuk is not presenting mitzvahs de'oraisa. That is it brings Birkach Olam, I noted before, it brings these other things which the Rambam thinks are actually de'rabanans. And indeed, the Ramban in Source Chavhei says, that's not what Yisro was doing here at all. He's not giving you a mitzvah saseh del raisa. In Source Chavhei, he says, L'fi dati od ki ein roi limno shum mitzvah mishum azharas Yisro l'moshe Rabbeinu. He says, don't count any mitzvah in the 613 from Yisro's commands or instructions to Moshe. Be'ilu lo'dia osam, sorry, lo'dia osam li'Yisroel, Yisrael, the leader of Shlem, she used reason, Be'elo Amitzos Tamid, Kedel Shakain Be'neim, Ava Be'ach, Shalom Vareus. Yisro's point was, do these things and everybody will get along. Yisma to Ataromos, Vadinin Be'neim, and so on and so forth. That's all he was trying to do. Oh, and you know, it's also, you reduce the number of cases on the docket in your courts, which, you know, is part of his goal. So, saying that Asher Ya'asun is a biblical source for Lefnei Mishuras Hadin is hard. Stronger case can be made for Ve'asisa HaYashar Ve'atov. I would have assumed Ve'asisa HaYashar Ve'atov was not Lefnei Mishuras Hadin at all, just based on the way the Gemara uses it. Because the Gemara invokes Ve'asisa HaYashar Ve'atov in two cases that are not Lefnei Mishuras Hadin. One was Dina de Bar Mitzra, right? That if you want to sell off your property, you have to give the right of first refusal to your neighbor. And the other was Shuma Hadar, the idea that if you collected a debt from somebody by taking some of their property and then they find the cash to pay the debt, so you have to return the object to them and take the money instead. But that's where it uses Vasisa Yashavatov. It doesn't bring Vasisa Yashavatov for Lefnei Mishuras Hadin. Nonetheless, Rashi does. Rashi says that is indeed Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. I brought it for you back in Source Chavdalet. I'm not really sure why I brought it back in Chavdalet, but Rashi and Vasisa Yashavatov Zup Shara Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. So Rashi takes the view that that's Lefnim Mishuras Hadin in its legal form, which is Pshara in court, and Ramban in Source Chavav does it as well on Vasisa Yashvatov. He quotes you Medrash Yafe, where they said Zok Shara Vilifnim Mishuras Hadin. He has the Vav Vilifnim Mishuras Hadin, and that's something that we discussed a little bit, but I'm not going back in there now. Tosfos does not seem to agree that Vasisa Yashvatov is a basis for this. He doesn't quote it anywhere that I could find. We also had this other idea that somebody brought that Valachta Bidrachov could be Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. But that's Agadata. That's not, you know, meaning Hashem, you know, the Gemara in Brachos and Dav Zayin, we appeal to Hashem to go for us, Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. Hashem goes, Lefnim Mishuras Hadin for us, and Halachta Bidrachov, so you should also. But that's Derech Agadah. That's not a real source. We also had the idea that maybe it's Hidur Mitzvah, which you could argue is Hidur Mitzvah of Chesed. This is a nice way to do chesed, and we had that whole piece in Rabbeinu Yehonasan about schar mitzvah, matan schar bitzida, I didn't plan to go through again, but it's in the Shita Mekupetzes in Bava Kama Kuftesvav. But more substantively, you can make the argument that it's hidur of din, part of being done din emes la'amito. That brought you the drisha in source chav Zion. He is commenting on what it means when the Gemara says Kol Adon Din Emes La'amito, that somebody who judges truthfully is a partner of Hashem in creation. So what exactly does Emes La'amito mean? Really, really true? Is that what it means? So the Drisha says no. In Source Chav Zion, he says, "Va'od yesh pirushim acherim vein tzarach bahem ela ha'ikar kamo shekasavdi b'prisha." He says, "You want to know what Emes Lamito means? It means what I wrote already in the prisha." He says, "You don't need anybody else's explanations." Vu vada hayadasa tosus rabbeinu v'kakasa beis yosei ba'atzmo. He says, "It means what I wrote over there." Having said that, and having really insisted that that's what it means, he says, "V'od ha'yanirali lefarish." But I have another explanation. I don't understand what he's doing. Nonetheless, I have another explanation. He judged the case based on that place and time, such that it will be to its truth. You don't always go with the letter of the law. Sometimes you have to give a psak, and it's a psak that is lifnim mishuras hadin, based on the context. And if you don't do that, avshu din emes eino la'amito. He says that's what the word la'amito is adding. It is din emes, but it's not emes la'amito. It's truth, the truth of that situation. Ve'al derech she'amru chazal, as Chazal said, Yerushalayim is destroyed because they didn't go with din Torah, they didn't do lifnim mishuras hadin. He says, that's what we're supposed to do, and then he goes on to say, that's what it means when the Torah says that you can't stray from what they tell you, yamin usmol, right or left. Even if they tell you about right that it's left, and left that it's right, and so on, what does that refer to? He says, as explained by the Akedas Yitzchak, that sometimes they'll tell you to go right instead of left because it's lifnim mishuras hadin. So maybe what this means is that it's a hidur of din. And that fits very well with the idea of Rav Soloveitchik regarding pshara, regarding compromise in a din Torah, where he takes the position that even when you're dealing with din, the ultimate goal is shalom and staka. A more nuanced recognition of right and wrong. He says that's what pshara accomplishes. If you take a look at Source Chavches, Inyan Pshara Hayaragil Rabbeinu Levaer Shu Gamkim Psak Din. Rav Shechter quotes the Rav saying that pshara is also a psak din. Elishu Psak Shelifnim Mishuras Hadin. I'm a Yusel Piyosher. He also calls it a psak. Again, that idea that it's psak. And it's based on what is right. He says, please don't misunderstand what compromise is supposed to be. It's not a 50-50 split. The point is, based on a sense of what's right, to determine who is right in this affair. It could be 100% opposite what it would have been if it were psak din. Psak din without lifnim mishuras hadin could have been all the money goes to the plaintiff. However, lifnim mishuras hadin may say all the money goes to the defendant. People like to say that there are two kinds of pshara. There's pshara that is close to din, meaning you're going to go closer to the legal principles of halacha. And then there's pshara stam, in which it's just we're going to make everybody happy. Rabbeinu Amar Sheinu Maven Hevdil Zeh. The Rav said, I don't get it. That's your basis. He's quoting that Medrash Yafa. You always have to act according to Yosher. That is Din HaTorah. That's Pshara, which is Din Torah. He doesn't like the whole idea that you're just going to do mediation and make everybody happy. That's not what he likes. I did note that if you take that view, then lifnim mishuras hadin becomes a law for dayanim only. Right? If you're going to understand that lifnim mishuras hadin is about being done din emes lamito, so that's a law for dayanim. Unless I'm going to say that din is a communal obligation. Like Shoftim v'Shotrim. Yeah, we have an obligation to set up Bati Din and so on, so we have an obligation to make sure Din is seen to, and therefore Lifnim has to be seen to as well, and it becomes everybody's duty. Maybe you can explain what you mean. Yeah.
So hard to become everybody's duty. I mean, even if you say you appoint judges that are going to follow that system, but it's very hard to say there's an individual misfocus to make sure it's a
Din. I think you're right. I mean, not because of this point. I think that's true in general.
I feel like the general, approach to this is that, you have, maybe a few, 4 to 5 keys of the materials today, but it also teaches a certain would apply to all people.
Right, I mean, what you're saying is like the Magid Mishnah, right? The Magid Mishnah in Hilchos Shechinim talks about the question of why you have the Kedoshim Tiyu and Vasis Ayashavato, like what are they about? And he says it's because the individual mitzvos that we have are not just about do this and carry this out. They're meant to inform our spiritual and ethical personalities such that we have a sensitivity that extends beyond them. And that's expressed in Kedoshim Tiyu and then in Vasis Ayashavato. So that, I think, is what you're saying.
Right, for sure.
You mean
the? I would say based on the last approach, that this is the approach, which also makes a lot of sense, the Dun and the Samito approach, it's very hard to apply that to our case in our Gemara. It's very hard to say that PIM is by Yosher.
I mean, when I first wrote this up, I actually had a line that I took out afterwards, but maybe I should have left it in, that I find Tosos far more compelling on our Gemara.
The guy broke it. Like, I'll pay him the Yosher, trying to pay him anyway.
So Tosfos is very good there, because what do I lose if I don't claim this thing myself? It wasn't mine in the first place. Easy come, easy go.
Does that factor something that's been missing? Meaning, I feel like it's sort of also, there's a certain subjective element to it. Okay? And I guess my part of my issue is that there's a certain subjectivity that could be dangerous, right? Like, once we start saying that we're not going to follow Din, then it really opens up the question of what's Din and what's not, right? Meaning, if I start saying, well, you know, finding an object that didn't own any way, even though the Torah says you can keep it, but the better thing is to give it the guy back anyway. So, if he gives a sim, give it back.
So, I would...
Sort of like,
I would note an overall theme in Halacha, that items that are not yours, you have less of a... Not a less of a claim to them, because they're not yours, but you're expected to surrender them fairly easily. So, you know, when you deal with Davar HaAved and Hesed-type arguments in Halacha, it doesn't apply to failure to gain something. It only applies to losing something you have. The principle of Hamotzi Mechaveru Alav Haraya, you want to get something from somebody else, you have to prove you have a right to it. Why shouldn't he have to prove that he has a right to keep it? Right? I mean, classic case. There's an object there on the street, and we wrestle over it, and before it can get to Beis Din, he pulls it and gets it, and now I don't have it. Beis Din is going to turn to me and say, "Amotzi Mechaveru Alav Haraya." He has no more right than I do. Nonetheless, possession is meaningful. I discussed this a little bit in the cognitive bias shiur, Jeffrey, a few years ago, when we talked about the bias that we have to not remove property from the person who's holding it, which is found in secular law, interestingly. But there is this sense of, if you don't have legal claim to this, then you should be more willing to give it up, and you should have to meet a higher threshold in order to get it.
Right, I just think it's interesting that what we're saying in that case is the Torah gives you the right to claim it, but there's still this other level where you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. I think that's very interesting.
Okay.
You know, like, I think some could argue the very fact that the Torah says that you're allowed to keep an object, the situation means ethical.
Well, that leads you into the separate conversation of ethics,
right?
and how we view mitzvahs. Are they inherently ethical?
Right.
Okay.
Shkoyach,
thank you very much. I can't believe
tomorrow we'll have a chazar shir on 6 year and one.
Tomorrow,
and prospective buyers.
That'll be impressive. That at 10:30 tomorrow. 10:30 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good. All right, Shkoyach, thank you very much.
Are we doing dinner?
Yes, Ezra, so you're going to stay on? Yeah, thanks.